You're listening to Radio 4. It's 7:45. Now it's time for the curtain to go up for Saturday Night Theatre. Conan Doyle and the Adalgy Case by Roy Apps, with Ian Cuthbertson as Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and Michael N. Harbour as George Adalgy.
This one's from the Isle of Wight, Sir Arthur. Dear Mr. Holmes, will you require a housekeeper for your country cottage at Christmas? I know someone who loves a quiet country life, and bees especially. An old-fashioned, quiet woman, yours, etc., M. Gunton, brackets, Miss.
Reply, dear Miss, whatever I said, I was interested to receive your communication regarding the position of temporary housekeeper to Mr. Sherlock Holmes. I like to inform you that Mr. Holmes will not be in need of domestic staff this Christmas, because, in the words of Mrs. Gamp, there ain't no such person. But thank you for your interest all the same. Yours, etc. Secretary, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Very good. Postage stamp?
Oh, as it's Christmas. But if she writes again, definitely not.
Of course. Oh, there's one more. Asking him and Watson to help free an innocent man who's to be tried for murder in Poland. Do you want to read it? The writer's rather unsteady grip on the intricacies of the English language does give it a certain charm.
No, I have no interest in Poland.
I'll sort out the replies to these this morning, then. Will you be working on manuscripts today?
No, Wood, I don't think so.
Oh.
I slept very badly again last night.
I'm sorry to hear that.
It makes me so wretchedly tired. Yes. Gibbs is calling over later. He might suggest a new prescription.
Yes.
I have a letter to finish to the ma'am. I promised I'd be waiting when she got back to London.
I'll bring your correspondence in for signature later, then, Sir Arthur.
Most dearest of ma'ams, I'm sorry to have to write that I'm still not fit. Gibbs can find nothing wrong with me. I've no symptoms, only weakness. I took a stroll yesterday down to the churchyard and put fresh flowers onto his grave. She occupies my thoughts a lot. Dear, dear Tui.
Arthur.
Tui, you must rest.
No. I know that some wives seek to hold their husbands to their memory after they've gone.
You'll tire yourself talking like this.
No. I want you to know that you have my understanding and my blessing if you should choose to marry again. You know who I mean.
You know, dear ma'ams, I never tried to give Tui a moment's unhappiness, to give her every attention, every comfort she could want. Did I succeed? God knows I hope so. I do not think that in the whole of our married life we had one cross word together. I was always faithful and loyal to her, you know that. But my soul was naturally and inevitably wrenched in two all the time, even though it is 6 months since she was laid to rest, and still is. Jean has written a number of times, but I felt unable to reply. The children and I are looking forward to seeing you for Christmas. I trust you're enjoying your stay in London. I shall meet the midday train, as promised, the day after tomorrow. Always, your dearest boy, Arthur.
I've heard nothing from him since the funeral. My letters have remained unanswered. You can be frank with me, Mrs. Doyle. Have his feelings towards me changed?
Jean, Arthur's love for you remained constant over 9 difficult years. It will not have changed now.
Then what has happened? Is he ill?
No, he's not what you'd call ill, though his letters have displayed an uncharacteristic listlessness of late. I wrote to Gibbs, his physician, who assured me that it is simply a matter of the state of his nerves.
I see.
During the last months, he spent hours in that sick room nursing her. I don't know, Jean, but it seems to have brought out an unnatural morbidity in him.
Then perhaps it's for the best that I haven't seen him.
He needs something to do.
Oh, do is a far finer word than believe, and action a far surer watchword than faith. He often used to say that to me.
What a pity it isn't the cricket season.
Oh, it's a pity he's not Mr. Sherlock Holmes. Then we could find him a case.
I don't know about a case. Causes are more in Arthur's line. A good cause, that's what he needs. So that he's obliged to pull himself together and stop brooding on the past. Will you take milk or lemon?
Oh, milk, please.
A good cause, yes.
People are always asking Arthur for his support.
As soon as I arrive tomorrow, I'll get Major Wood on our side. You know Arthur's secretary.
Yes, we've met.
He'll be able to keep an eye on likely projects in Arthur's daily correspondence.
Oh, I do hope he can find something.
I've always found Major Wood to be a gentleman of considerable resourcefulness.
Yes.
He'll snap out of it soon, Jean. Don't fret. I shall see to it myself. I must. I intend to see you two married within the year. That's why I was so keen for us to be able to take tea together. Action is a surer watchword than faith. Now, can I tempt you with another scone, my dear?
Are you ready to go through today's correspondence, Sir Arthur?
You can deal with it, Wood, can't you? I'll append my signature when necessary.
There is one letter here I thought you might be particularly interested in.
Oh?
It's a request for help.
Well, we've a standard reply.
It's rather different from the usual run of appeals. Can I read it to you?
It might be preferable to returning to the dining room for a hectoring from the mem.
Yes, your mother's a redoubtable lady, Sir Arthur.
Yes, it's not yet Christmas Eve.
Dear Sir Conan Doyle.
Not my dear Mr. Holmes.
No.
And it is different from the usual run. Go on.
I'm writing to you because I know of your reputation as a defender of all that is truthful and just. I have been the victim of a monstrous miscarriage of justice. I know that you are a busy man with numerous interests in all walks of life, but I would beg a moment of your time to describe the details of my case, which are set out in full below. I am yours most sincerely, G.E.T. Adalji.
Who?
Ed Algy.
Odd sort of name?
I'd rather imagine it is of Indian origin. I've already had a brief look at the letter, and it is a most singular case. Shall I read on?
Oh, there might be a plot for a Sherlock Holmes adventure in it.
Possibly. See what you think. My home and birthplace is the village of Great Worley in the county of Staffordshire, where my father, the Reverend Shapurji Adalji, who was born a Parsee, is vicar. This is an area of English countryside given over in part to farming and in part to coal mining. Such a division of interests makes for a murky and grimy landscape. Our hills are slag heaps, our valleys open pits, and the predominant architectural features are not the spires of village churches, but pit head winding gear.
The village of Great Worley consists mainly of a few rows of shabby and artless cottages, their red bricks coated with a thin layer of grime. On one side, the village is separated from its more prosperous neighbour, Cheslin Hay, by the tracks of the London and North Western Railway line, and on the other side, from its more picturesque neighbour, Little Worley, by the main Birmingham to Manchester road. My story begins 3.5 years ago, in the summer of 1903. There are twin evils stalking the village of Great Worley and its neighbours. There has been a spate of vicious cattle maiming in the area, while at the same time poison pen letters gloating over these crimes are being sent to members of my family, including myself, and to the police. However, despite large numbers of extra police being drafted in from neighbouring towns, there have been no arrests. However, the police and the public have their suspicions, a fact of which I am made well aware as I stand late one Sunday evening, well hidden under an old beech tree by the churchyard wall. A young policeman paces up and down outside the lych gate.
Evening.
Evening, sir.
Ah, don't know you, do I?
Constable Rowley.
Ah, there's no Rowleys in Worley.
Well, I've been drafted in from Cannock.
Thought as much.
The cattle maiming.
Well, you won't find him coming out of the church.
Oh, how?
Well, you don't go to church these days. It's the look he gets you, say.
I see.
No, you don't. None of you do. You all know down at the station who's ripping the poor beasts up.
Well, the inspector has his suspicions.
He comes out of the alleyways at night like a big black monster. He scares the women livid, staring at them with those great, sly, bulging eyes. I've seen him and he scares me, and I don't take for it easy.
Yeah, I'm sure you don't.
They say he has to make a sacrifice. They say it's his religion.
Oh.
Horses and ponies one day. Could be women and children the next day. And if he tries anything again, it won't be just him who'll have to face the music. It'll be them who had the power to stop him, and blast he didn't. They're as guilty as him, you take my meaning. Hello, they're coming out. See how quickly they walk away. Uneasy, say. Some of them won't touch the vicar's hand. It's tainted. Look, it can't go on like this. You and the rest of them better take good note of what I've been saying.
I was gripped by a feeling of sickness and fear, for the man suspected of horse maiming was not some local hooligan or crazed maniac, but a well-known and educated young man who practiced as a solicitor in the city of Birmingham. A young man whose mixed parentage marked him out as an object for scaremongering tongues. Yes, Sir Conan Doyle, I was the suspect. The following day, an anonymous letter arrived for me at my office, abusing and threatening me in the most vile terms. I took it, as indeed I had other such letters that I had received previously, to Inspector Campbell at Worley Police Station.
Another anonymous letter, Mr. Adalji. This is fast becoming a habit.
Will you read it, Inspector?
Of course I will.
You will see that it contains the most vile suggestions concerning myself and a certain lady.
Yes, it is certainly most offensive to the lady in question.
It is also offensive to me, Inspector. Furthermore, it makes accusations against my character. It accuses me of involvement in the horse maimings.
Hmm. Go back to your old game of killing cows and writing anonymous letters. It accuses you of writing anonymous letters, too. Well, well, well. By a strange coincidence, we have received a letter at the station, too. Would you say there's a pattern here, Mr. Adalji?
A pattern?
I mean that every time you come in here with an anonymous letter, it turns out we've got one to match it. Sergeant Robinson.
Sir?
Read out the letter you received this morning to Mr. Adalji.
A party whose initials you'll guess is going to kill beasts again here soon. Why, just think, he did it where two of you were riding only a few days gone by. But, sir, he has got eagle eyes, and his ears is as sharp as a razor, and he is as fleet of foot as a fox, and as noiseless. And he crawls on all fours up to the poor beasts, and he fondles them a bit, and then he pulls the hook smart across them, and out their entrails fly, before they guess they are hurt. And you, Sergeant Robinson, you bloated blackguard, I will shoot you with father's gun through your thick head if you come in my way. You know who it is, and I can prove it. But until £100 reward is offered for a conviction, I shan't split no more. Which, more the pity, you blackguards, for there will be merry times in Worley when they start on little girls, for they will do 20 wenches like the horses before next March.
You see, the sergeant's life has been threatened. That is a most serious crime, threatening the life of a police officer. Though, of course, you would know all about that.
Inspector?
Being a lawyer.
I know one thing, this whole dreadful business has got to be stopped.
It has indeed, Mr. Adalji. But if we don't put him away soon, the local lynch mob will do to him what he's been doing to the horses and to the cattle.
Some of the farmers are already carrying guns.
And if they get to hear that it's to be their daughters next, I wouldn't like to contemplate what they might be moved to do.
How many men have you on the case now?
30.
30? 30 men can't hope to cover every field and farm in the district.
That is all the men I have.
Have you ever thought of employing bloodhounds?
Just leave this postcard with us, Mr. Adalji. And don't worry. We will trap him soon. We have our suspicions.
The whole village has its suspicions, Inspector. I only trust that you charge the right man. Over the next few days, it is not difficult to notice that heads are turning more, that conversations cease abruptly when I approach. On the evening of August the 17th, as I am returning from collecting a pair of boots from the cobbler, I notice two constables and the sergeant under the street lamp by the railway bridge. They are in the process of observing the vicarage in a none too discreet manner. Slipping up the alleyway by the track, I can hear them quite clearly.
Sergeant?
Yes, Rowley.
Parsons here and I were talking, and, well, what I don't understand, Sergeant, is, I mean, if he's doing it, why does he write letters incriminating himself?
You don't come from round here, lad. You don't know the man.
Yeah, but
it's a measure of how clever he is. Accusing himself in letters which he received himself is simply a way of throwing suspicion away from himself.
Oh,
they're cunning, these Injuns. Ask Josh Waldershaw. He was at Lucknow. Some say he runs a gang.
Yeah, but why does he do it?
Why is the grass green? If he was a miner or a farmhand, he'd be inside by now. But you can't touch a precious vicar's son just like that, even if he is an Injun. But his time will come.
Well, I hope it's soon, Sergeant. I don't intend to spend the rest of my life on nights in Great Whirley. I've got a wife and baby at home in Cannock.
He fondles them a bit, and then he pulls the hook smart across them, and out their entrails fly. He'll do 20 wenches before next March. He's also threatened my brains with a shotgun. It could easily be yours, Constable. Remember that. There's more than 20 of you out here tonight. If he strikes, we shall catch him red-handed.
Yes, Sergeant.
I shall be at the station if you need me.
Yes, Sergeant.
Well, if the beggar comes out in this, he should be put in the asylum.
Yeah, and if I die in pneumonia, Parsons, arrest the sergeant, not George Adelgy.
Well, they'll have a mutiny on their hands if this goes on much longer.
Oh, well, come on. One more circuit, then we'll meet for Jack Turnbull's signal box for a cup of cocoa and a game of cards.
Right. It's the least we deserve.
It is about 9:30. I watch the constables plod wearily up the east side of the vicarage garden, and then I slip up the driveway and into the front door. After supper, I retire straight to bed. By dawn, the storm has begun to clear away. There are a few regular passengers who travel to offices in Birmingham on the 7:30 train. Usually they are a reserved group, but this morning excited chatter abounds. Apparently, a young miner on his way to work at Whirley Colliery has taken his usual short cut across Plant Pit Meadow. At the far end of the meadow, by the kissing steps, he has stumbled over a pit pony with its belly ripped open. I notice a number of eyes turning to me, though no one addresses me. As I step into the train, my sense of foreboding and fear is great, and although I did not know it at the time, of course my feelings were fully justified, for the police were already on their way to the
vicarage. My sister's record of that fateful morning is attached.
It is my belief that the lowest and vilest alleys of London do not present a more dreadful record of sin than does the smiling and beautiful countryside.
Uh-huh. Holmes?
The copper beaches.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, Wood, continue with this gruesome tale, do.
To whom it may concern. Testimony of Miss Maud Adalgy. Description of police visit to the vicarage, Great Whirley, August the 18th, 1903. My first inkling of what was to befall us on that dreadful morning was at about 8:20, when I glanced out of the window and saw Inspector Campbell, together with about a dozen officers, marching purposefully towards the house. They were closely followed by a small group of local people. Our maid Dora answered the door and ushered in the inspector, who needed no second bidding.
Good morning, Mrs. Adalgy. Miss Adalgy.
My husband is upstairs, Inspector. A run upstairs and fetch him, Maud.
It is not your husband we want, Mrs. Adalgy.
George is at work in Birmingham.
Then we shall be able to speak to him there later. I presume he has left the dagger here?
The dagger?
If I could see your son's dagger.
He has no dagger.
Oh, come, come, Mrs. Adalgy. He must use some kind of weapon. What is it that Miss Adalgy takes with her when she goes out getting flowers?
Fetch your botany trowel here, Maud.
Yes, Mother.
I'd also like to see his clothes.
What clothes?
All of them.
Excuse me, sir. I've sent a dozen men to work scouring the garden, sir.
Good.
Really, Inspector, is this necessary?
My botany trowel, Inspector.
This isn't a dagger.
No, it's a botany trowel. For collecting species of wild flowers.
Inspector, in the schoolroom, there's a cupboard, and it's locked.
Oh. I ask for a few officers with detective skills, and what do I find myself with? The greenhorns, and half which the other stations can do without. Have you not heard of a crowbar, Constable?
Yes, sir, I just thought...
Yeah, well, thinking does not produce clues.
No, sir.
What is this commotion?
Well, good morning, Reverend Hidalgo. I think you know why we are here.
I found this coat, sir. It's still damp.
Yes, continue upstairs, Sergeant.
Right, sir.
Remember, we're looking for a weapon now. This is your son's coat, Mr. Adalji.
Yes, but...
There is a horsehair on the sleeve.
Well, I can see no horsehair.
Would you not call that a horsehair?
That? That I would call a piece of thread.
And these dark stains on the cuff, what would you call them?
Take the coat, Inspector. Take everything. Take the table. Take the chairs, if you wish. You'll find no evidence of a crime here, because nobody in this household has committed a crime.
Charlotte, don't distress yourself.
Well, I think it is time I made a journey to Birmingham.
Inspector, there has been a horrible mistake. Every movement can be explained. This razor was in the bedroom, sir. It's still wet.
Of course it is wet. I have just shaven.
Put it carefully with the rest of the evidence, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and don't forget, I want the entire grounds quartered.
Sir, you can catch him there.
Excuse me, sir. Stop at your sentinel. Have you found any evidence?
I shall be making a statement later.
Have you found the dagger?
Shut the door, Maud. Quickly.
I kept on the continued activity from an upstairs window. Two long rows of constables slowly combed every inch of the vicarage grounds, looking for evidence. A few more kept the local people at bay, some of whom were beginning to shout abuse at the house. My mother, shuffling along the corridor in the way that my grandmother used to, opened the door of her room and locked herself in, while my father, his head bent low, walked over to the church to pray. It was lunchtime before the police dispersed. This is my full and honest testimony. Signed, Maud Adalji.
How the crowd loved to hate a stranger would.
Indeed.
In what a short time does unsubstantiated rumour become established fact. So the dutiful Inspector Campbell duly arrested the unfortunate George Adalji.
Yes. He says, it was lunchtime when Inspector Campbell arrived at my office and took me to the Steelhouse Lane cells in Birmingham. I was convinced now that the police were going to charge me, come what may, and that I would have to wait for a trial for my innocence to be proven. I had seen and felt the strength of local hysteria against me, and knew that the police were under great pressure to have me locked up. There were the usual interminable appearances before magistrates. I refused bail, thinking that in prison at least I would be safe, both from members of the public, who might have been tempted to take what they saw as justice into their own hands, and, of course, from any further accusations.
A wise decision.
Friends brought me reports that things were now calmer in Worley, and that the extra constables who had been drafted in had all returned to their own towns and villages.
No doubt to the relief of all concerned.
However, on the night of September the 21st, while I was in Stafford Jail awaiting trial, that calm was rudely disturbed by another outrage. A horse belonging to Green, a local farmer, was mutilated and had to be put down. I knew that this occurrence could only add strength to my case, particularly when I heard from my sister that Green's son, Harry, had confessed to maiming his father's horse. I was quietly confident of an early acquittal. However, on the 29th of October, I was taken in the police carriage to Staffordshire Assizes.
They'd ripped the carriage door off in their frenzy, though thanks to the quick action of the driver in heading them off, I was unharmed, though not a little shaken. My action in refusing bail seemed to have been fully justified. I was hoping that the judge would find there was no case to answer, possibly even before the end of the day's proceedings. It was my parents who first had intimation of the real state of affairs, as my father later revealed to me.
Adalgy.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Vetrell. You know my wife.
Mrs. Adalgy.
Mr. Vetrell, George's solicitor.
Good morning, Mr. Vetrell.
We've some good news.
Oh?
The prosecution offering no evidence with regard to the threat on Sergeant Robinson's life. So your son's case will be heard in number 2 court. It's the one used for the more minor offences.
I see.
But you've no need to worry. The prosecution case is, rather flawed, as we say.
And the judge, he is a gentleman of understanding?
Well, it's not a judge, exactly. Not in number 2 court. It's actually lay, half a dozen magistrates. Sir Reginald Hardy will be presiding. He's a nice enough chap, a local dignitary and all that.
Yes, we do know who he is.
Well, he's very experienced. And there is a barrister in the building to advise on points of law, if needs be. Look, I must go.
Go?
Well, I'm defending a number 1 as well. I shall be in to present George's case when the time comes. There's no need to worry. It's all very straightforward. Look, I should go in. It looks as though they're ready to start proceedings.
Mr. Adalgy, in your statement you testified that you returned home at about 9:30, took your supper and retired to bed in a locked room shared with your father.
That is correct.
Look at the coat before you. Is it yours?
It is.
Can you explain how traces of mammalian blood came to be found on the cuffs?
possibly from a nosebleed or a cut.
Or horse hairs on the sleeve, identified by the veterinary surgeon as being from the pony killed on the night of August the 18th. Mr. Adalgy, exhibit number 3, a pair of boots. Do they belong to you?
They do.
Members of the jury, as you will see, the left boot is unusual in that the heel is very much worn down at the back. Footprints showing a worn down heel were found at the scene of the crime. Mud from the field was also found on this pair of boots. Have you any explanation, Mr. Adalgy?
No.
Exhibit number 4. Anonymous letters sent to the prisoner's office and to the police. The prisoner made use of these to question the police about the state of their investigation, to see how far they were behind him.
I did not...
Did you not ask Inspector Campbell how many men have you on the case now? And have you thought of using bloodhounds?
I may have done.
Mr. Dalgy, can you comment on this extraordinary domestic arrangement whereby you sleep in the same room as your father?
Well, I have done so ever since my younger brother was taken ill and had to be nursed in our room by my mother. My father and I occupy different beds.
Indeed. And what is the reason for locking the door of your shared bedroom each night?
All the doors are locked at night.
To prevent someone from getting in, or to deter a member of the household from a peculiar habit of walking abroad late at night? The prosecution rests its case.
We've heard evidence as to the prisoner's clothes, his boots, and peculiar sleeping arrangements. A leading graphologist has testified that the prisoner's handwriting and the handwriting in the anonymous letters are one and the same. We've heard details during this trial of a reign of terror in Great Whirley, which has been a hideous blot upon and a disgrace too the fair name of our county. It's therefore difficult to overestimate how important it is to bring to justice the perpetrator of these outrages. Gentlemen of the jury, have you reached your verdict?
We have.
And is it the verdict of you all?
It is.
What is your verdict?
We find the prisoner guilty, but with a recommendation of mercy.
On what grounds?
Because of his personal position.
George Edward Thompson Adalgy, the jury found you guilty of this very serious charge, and as we think, very properly. Their verdict is a right one. They have recommended you to mercy. We take fully into consideration your personal position and what any punishment means to you. On the other hand, we have to consider the state of the county of Staffordshire and the neighbourhood of Great Whirley, and the disgrace which has been inflicted on us and that neighbourhood by the condition of things. Your sentence is penal servitude for 7 years.
Lord, have mercy on us.
The court will rise.
I was sent to Portland Jail and then transferred to Lewis, where, ironically enough, my work was the sewing up of nosebags for horses. My friends have worked tirelessly on my behalf, and Mr. Yelverton, the former Chief Justice of the Bahamas, who, as you may know, has been most active in pushing for the establishment of a court of criminal appeal, organized a petition of 10,000 signatures requesting reconsideration of my case. 2 weeks ago, having completed barely half my sentence, I was released from jail on indefinite ticket of leave, the issue to which I direct your
attention, Sir Conan Doyle, is a simple one, and is this. If the authorities believe me guilty, why have they suddenly released me? If they now believe my innocence, why have I received no pardon or compensation? I am, yours most sincerely, George Adalji.
Uh-huh. Is that it?
Yes, yes, that's all.
What are they up to?
Who?
Those two children of mine out there.
Huh? Oh, it rather looks as though your mother has sent them into the garden to collect some sprigs of holly and mistletoe.
She's been in the house but a day and already she's behaving as if she's conducting a military campaign.
Yes.
She's appalled by my lack of Christmas preparations, you know, Wood. Worse still, she insists I go up to town with her this afternoon to help her with shopping.
Do you want me to reply to this Adalji letter?
No. Leave it with me. I'll deal with it.
Madame Raymond told me of the latest stories circulating in Paris about His Majesty, apparently. Not so much Folie Bergère as Folie Edouard, if you ask me.
Sorry, do what?
I was saying, what is it that makes such riveting reading?
Oh, a letter that arrived this morning.
Oh, not one of mine, I see.
No, it is from a Parsee son who wants my assistance. He claims to have been imprisoned on false evidence.
And has he?
He's a professional man, a solicitor. There appears no reason to doubt his word.
Then you'd better get down to it and set about clearing Mr. Adalji's good name.
You know of the case?
I have read some reports in the press.
I think there are certain questions that need answers.
Do is a better word than believe, Arthur. Well, can you think of a better man for the job? I think we should take in Swan and Itkers first.
But what about you?
This is all absolutely necessary, ma'am.
It's the festival of Christmas, Arthur. Now, what are you going to buy Mary?
I don't know.
Well, surely your daughter is deserving of a Christmas present. You've bought a rather fine set of books for Kingsley. What's her fancy?
I don't know. Tui always dealt with Mary.
Something like this.
A trinket.
When I was 17, I couldn't get enough trinkets. I'm sure the modern girl is no different.
Well, why couldn't you have gone Christmas shopping while you were staying with Madame Bremont?
I had people to see. Excuse me, miss.
Well, what people?
Jean, for one. Could I see that trinket in the display case there?
Jean?
This one, madam?
Yes, that's the one.
Jean, you saw Jean.
Why? You have treated her, so I cannot think. Unless you are being unnecessarily sensitive to public rumour and innuendo, which, if you are, is unworthy of you.
Oh, ma'ams.
Here you are, madam.
There. Now, that would suit Mary just fine, don't you think?
10,000 signatures were collected for the petition, Doyle. 10,000.
Impressive indeed, Yelverton. Mr. Adalji seems to know a good many people.
Oh, they weren't all known to him, of course. Many of them fellow solicitors up and down the country who knew of his book.
He's a writer, too.
Oh, yes. This is his book. Very highly thought of.
A concise guide to the railway law of England and Wales.
A most scholarly work.
Well, if 10,000 people know of it.
Oh, no. A good many of the signatures were from those in the profession and outside who saw the case as yet another example of why we need a court of criminal appeal. The conduct of the trial left much to be desired.
It is a most extraordinary case. The deliberate and callous wounding of cattle and horses, it seems like the work of a crazed devil.
Oh, it is not so unusual a crime, Doyle.
Oh?
Well, particularly not in that area of the country. I've some figures here. Judicial statistics relating to the county of Staffordshire, 1894 to 1903. Numbers of persons tried summarily for malicious damage to animals. In the last 4 years, 1899, 18, 1900, 11, 1901, 13, 1903, 23.
Good heavens!
No, cattle maiming is not some barbaric practice imported from the Indian subcontinent, but as you can see, a failing peculiar to the county of Staffordshire. But none of this is of help to George Adalji. Until he receives a royal pardon, he is still under the sentence meted out to him at that mockery of a trial.
I would like to see a copy of the trial transcript.
Quite right. It is a capital mistake to theorize before one has the data. One of Mr. Sherlock Holmes' sayings.
Yes.
I wondered if you would take up Mr. Holmes' methods in practice. As you can see, I'm quite a follower.
If I adhere to the principles of any of the characters in my novels, it would be to Sir Nigel Loring. You do not know the White Company or my latest work, Sir Nigel.
No.
He abides by the chivalric code of honor, truth, and justice. Could I see the trial manuscript?
No. The trial transcript was unfortunately mislaid by the court.
What? That's monstrous!
The chief constable informed me himself. Oh. He also warned me. Now, where's the letter? You will find it a waste of time to attempt to prove that George Adalji could not have written those offensive letters. I am aware of several people who have personal knowledge of his proclivities in that direction.
The case takes an unexpected turn. Who is this chief constable?
Captain the Honourable George Augustus Anson, second son of the Earl of Lichfield.
Mary? Is there something wrong?
No, of course not. But won't you join us downstairs?
Oh, has the ma'am sent you?
Oh, only sort of. But must you work on Christmas Day?
This unfortunate fellow has asked for my help, my dear. Oh. And I intend to be ready for action as soon as the Christmas holiday is over.
But people are asking you to help solve crimes all the time, Father.
This one's different. It's a great challenge. The evidence collected against this innocent man looks strong. He was imprisoned for writing a threatening letter and killing a pony. A handwriting expert testified that he'd written the letter. His coat showed traces of the pony's hairs and of blood. His footprints were found near the pony, and mud from the field was found in his boots.
Sounds like a job for Mr. Holmes.
The most distressing thing is how the whole shambles started. Rumor, hearsay, gossip, repeated, rephrased, and passed on from person to person to the extent that it became accepted wisdom and then accepted fact. Mary, there is much injustice in the world, but the worst kind is false accusation based on malicious and prejudiced gossip.
Yes, Father, I know. Father?
Hmm?
When you... I mean... Oh, just supposing you were to marry again, Kingsley and I would not mind, and I think Mama would understand too, if it made you happy.
But Mary, my dearest thing, I have no intention of remarrying. There, that's the letter done.
There are no mail deliveries today, Father. It is Christmas Day.
I know, but I intend to ensure that it goes off in the very next collection. I've asked Mr. Adalji to meet me at the Charing Cross Hotel the day after tomorrow.
Sir Arthur, good afternoon. May I take your overcoat?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
The Asiatic-looking gentleman reading a newspaper at the corner table.
Good.
Mr. George Adalji?
Oh. Sir Conan Doyle?
Yes.
Oh, how do you do? I'm most grateful for your interest.
Not at all. Not at all. My apologies for being late. I was unexpectedly detained by some business at my club. You always suffer from such a high degree of myopia.
Oh.
Yes.
But quite a marked astigmatism, too.
Yes, sir.
Take this note, will you, to Mr. Kenneth Scott, Manchester Square. He will conduct a full examination of your eyesight and make a detailed written report on your condition. Cigarette?
I have never smoked, Sir Conan.
I'm usually a pipe man myself. It's only recently I've taken a fancy to cigarettes.
You think you can make out a case for me?
The first sight I had of you, the way you held your newspaper to the side, close to your face, told me it was highly improbable that you could ever have committed the crime for which you were condemned. Tell me, Adalji, is there any reason at all, other than malice, prejudice, or ignorance, why you should have been suspected of slandering yourself and your family as well as the police?
Well, some 13 years ago, when I was 16, 17, there was a series of practical jokes played on my family. There had been similar occurrences at various times during my childhood.
What sort of practical jokes?
Oh, cartloads of goods arriving at the house that had not been ordered. A friend of my father's arrived post-haste one day, having received a telegram to say my father was seriously ill. Oh, a key to Walsall Grammar School was found on our doorstep. The vicarage was advertised in a local newspaper as a matrimonial agency. We put all this down to local resentment at my father's color and background. You understand?
I was brought up in Scotland and in England as an Irishman and a Roman Catholic.
Yes.
Your father informed the local police of this harassment.
Yes, and they from the start suspected me and reported their suspicions, though of course there was no evidence, to Captain Anson, the chief constable.
How do you know this?
This is a letter my father had from him.
Will you please ask your son, George, from whom the kicking was obtained?
The last paragraph.
I may say at once that I shall not pretend to believe any protestations of ignorance which your son may make. He's a prolific correspondent, this Jeff Anson.
The victimization continued. My father reported every incident to the police, of course. Another letter from Captain Anson. Bottom of the page.
I know the name of the offender, though I prefer to keep my suspicion to myself until I'm able to prove them. I have no doubt that the offender will be detected, and I trust to be able to obtain a dose of penal servitude for him. It's nothing but malicious suggestion and innuendo. I consider them worse than the supposed crime. Believe me, Adalji, I know how you must have felt, must still feel.
I am really most grateful for your interest in my case.
If there is a case where justice cries out to be done, it's yours, Adalji.
I have every faith in your methods, Sir Arthur.
The most serious matter is the amount of hard evidence that was heard against you.
I have no idea how they came by all that.
Then I must make a search for what others may have overlooked. I intend to visit Great Worley in the next few days. Perhaps I could call on your family.
They would be delighted, I'm sure.
I will also seek an interview with this captain, the Honorable George Augustus Ansell.
Campbell, Robinson, take a chair. This is an entirely informal discussion. We are shortly to receive a visit from a gentleman making inquiries about Adalji.
That is nothing new, sir.
I am not talking about some commoner garden scribbler from the Staffordshire Sentinel. I refer to a gentleman who can command column inches in the national newspapers.
Yes, sir.
Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Conan Doyle?
The detective story writer.
I can assure you, Captain Anson, that none of the men still at Great Worley will say anything out of turn.
I should hope not, Sergeant. If you and your men had been at your duty, instead of in the London and North Western Railway signal box, he would have been caught red-handed. Instead of which, we are plagued with do-gooding snoopers wasting our time.
Yes, sir.
But we've been over that ground. He is not to visit your station, Sergeant Robinson, or yours, Campbell. To avoid that situation, I have had no option but to grant him an audience here. I'll play him along a little. If he does come sniffing around, you know where to refer him.
Yes, sir.
I shall do my duty by you and the men under your command, as I have done throughout the whole sorry affair. And I expect every other officer and constable to be aware of where his duty lies too.
Certainly, sir.
Adverse criticism, derision, and unwarranted interference in our affairs affect the morale of the men under our command. That, in turn, only makes life easier for the criminal classes. Remember that.
Be careful with that bag, Herman. Goodbye, Kingsley, dear. And Mary?
Goodbye, Granny.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mrs. Doyle.
Oh, Major Wood.
Ah, yes.
You are a marvel. I just pray for his sake, and for all our sakes, that he is right about this analogy.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be all right.
I'm coming to the station with you, ma'am.
Nonsense, dear boy. I shall be perfectly comfortable.
I insist. Move up.
Oh.
Bye.
I thought you were busy with Mr. Adalgy's papers.
There's little more I can do at present. I go to Staffordshire tomorrow.
Just so long as you don't forget your letter-writing responsibilities.
Ma'am, dear, have I ever...
To me, no. But I was meaning another party.
Ma'ams.
You owe Jean some sort of explanation. Why are you punishing her and yourself like this?
Connie, my own sister, jibbing at me, insinuating there has been something sordid between us while poor Tui was alive.
She's too much Catholic, too little woman, that one.
What is the difference whether your relations with Jean are platonic or not, she said to me. All the difference between guilt and innocence, I replied. How many other parties may be making similar accusations? I was never once unfaithful to Tui.
Then you should feel no guilt. Does Mr. Adalgy feel guilty because certain malignant parties wish him so? Then neither should you.
My dear Jean, I will not attempt to justify or explain my silence since Tui's death. Remember Box Hill. We are still and always will be of one kind. I go to Staffordshire, where barbarism and superstition reign. Meet on my return. I do not ask forgiveness, only that you are still able to return the love of your only A.C.D.
Sir Conan Doyle, it is most noble of you to take up our son's case like this.
You've seen George, I understand. Is he well?
Yes, very well.
Oh, may I take your coat?
No.
Did you often become Mr. Holmes?
Naughty!
Miss Adalgy, if Sherlock Holmes were here, his interest would be solely in the solving of the crime. I'm here because, like many others, I'm determined to see justice done in George's case.
No, Maudie, arrange with Dora for some coffee to be sent up for Sir Arthur.
No, thanks very much. I'll decline the offer of coffee in favor of making a prompt start of investigating the so-called evidence. Firstly, I should like to tread the path that George is supposed to have taken that fateful night.
Shapoji? My dear... I am not going to drag myself through hedges and over railway lines with Sir Arthur.
Oh, of course. I shall fetch my overcoat.
And your boots.
And my boots.
Oh, we have had wet spells, followed by very cold ones. There is a deal of mud and ice about. You've had cold weather in London.
Yes, it's been very cold.
Oh, lunches at one.
So... this is the Plant Pit Meadow, eh?
Can you give me a hand?
Good heavens. I didn't realize the gap in the hedge was so small.
All the lads use it, but I no longer have the agility of my youth.
Push those sticks back. Out, fool. Oh, dear.
This is of no consequence. Sorry. It is only an old jacket. Now then, you can see Wearley Colliery away to your left. And this is where the poor horse was found. They call it the Kissing Steps.
Where the local lads bring their sweethearts.
I believe so.
It's not a very picturesque spot.
The gorse affords some privacy.
Interesting. Yes. Interesting.
Have you found valuable clues, Sir Conan Doyle?
It's the spirit of the place. Come, let us retrace our footsteps homeward. I would not wish once to be delayed.
Of course.
And your walk, it was of use, Sir Arthur?
Yes. The soil is of a most unusual hue, a yellowish red.
The Triassic sandstone is mixed with clay.
There are also considerable carboniferous deposits in the area.
Pass your father the cold meat, my dear.
But no clues.
Only confirmation, if anyone needed, that a person with your son's ocular condition could not possibly have made the journey to the field and back.
Perhaps you should concentrate on the evidence the police collected when they ransacked the house.
Tooth. They didn't ransack it, dear.
You mean the jacket?
The one we all testified George wasn't wearing on the night. Much good that did.
Have you an explanation as to how the horsehairs came to be on the jacket?
They took the jacket away. There were no horsehairs on it. They went next to collect part of the horsehide from the veterinarian. They put both pieces of evidence in the sack and took them to the police surgeon. Eureka! He finds some horsehairs on the jacket.
My papers.
Just a minute now. Somewhere the police surgeon's evidence is one of the few official documents remaining intact. Where are we? Yes. Investigated. Time of attack estimated. Yes.
Numerous hairs in the jacket, which were similar in colour, length, and structure to those on the piece of skin cut from the horse. Not from the general body of the pony where the attacker would have picked them up, but from the particular piece of hide that was transferred to the surgeon with the coat.
Exactly. Police incompetence.
Oh, well, dear, a mistake, at any rate.
One piece of evidence found wanting, which leaves the boot, the handwriting,
and the bloodstains.
Aha, the bloodstains. What do they turn out to be? Two patches no bigger than a threepenny bit. I'm not concerned with the bloodstains.
You're not?
Well, look at your own cuffs, said Dalgy.
But my cuffs?
Are there not small stains upon them, even blood from shaving? Small cuts, undercooked meat even?
Oh, Sir Arthur, I'm sorry if the beef is looking...
No, Mrs. Dalgy. Forgive me, I'm not referring to this splendid luncheon. I was speaking hypothetically.
Would you like a piece more?
No, thank you all the same. It's been a most pleasant meal.
Sharpoji.
Praise God, from whom all blessings flow. Praise him, all creatures here below. Praise him, above ye heavenly host. Praise Father, Son, and Holy Ghost.
Amen.
Maudie, dear.
Yes, Mother, of course. Sir Arthur.
Mrs. Adelgy. Mr. Dalgy.
Do sit.
Oh, thank you.
Cigarette?
No, thank you. I have my pipe.
You find our circumstances unusual, perhaps.
I find most human situations of some interest, but a Parsee, ordained as a priest in the Church of England, married to an English woman, and occupying a particularly rude and unrefined country parish in the industrial heartland of the Midlands, I find more unusual than most.
I was at a Free Church of Scotland college in Bombay. Later I joined the Anglican Communion. When I took holy orders, I had every intention of serving the Christian community somewhere in India. But I had a chance visit to England, and while here, met and married my English wife.
And how did you come to be at Great Worley?
My wife's uncle is the vicar at Ketley in Shropshire, and the Great Worley living is in his gift. It was his wedding present to us.
Can it have been easy?
Oh, God has been good to us in many ways. It has, I think, been harder for the children. Nigger boy, nigger girl was a favorite epithet. Maud would stubbornly ignore it all and then come home and read for hours in her room. Though she does now enjoy the friendship of a number of young ladies of her own age.
And George?
George was different. Studious, always worked hard. He had no time for play or for society. You know, he achieved the distinction of having his name placed in the second-class honors list of the Incorporated Law Society final examination. He was a most respected member of his profession.
His arrest and conviction must have made things very difficult for you. He didn't think of moving away.
The Reverend Ketley has no other livings in his gift. This is our home, Sir Conan. We are a close family. Shall we take a turn around the garden?
Why not? I mustn't stay a moment longer, though. I have a 3:30 appointment at Stafford with Captain the Honorable George Hanson.
Oh, you have? Huh? He is a gentleman, Captain Hanson. And that is to say, he was born.
Well, Doyle, I'd answer what questions I can, though, of course, I was not involved in his arrest.
Oh?
If you recall, they finally picked him up sometime in the middle of August. I'm always north of the border at that time of the year. For the grouse, you understand. Convinced you of his innocence, has he?
From the very first sight I had of him. He has myopia of 8 diopters.
Did he tell you that he had been mercilessly hounded and threatened by the county constabulary over a period of years?
He mentioned that he thought he'd been suspected for some time.
For 12, 13 years. First, a key to Walsall Grammar School was found on the vicarage doorstep. Nasty little notes and letters started arriving. He told you all about that?
Yes.
And that I wrote a threatening letter to his father?
I have seen the letter.
Yes, then you'll understand. It was intended as a warning. We had information implicating George. Well, he comes from a decent enough family. I rather hoped his father might be able to exercise the necessary control over him. Unfortunately, this was not to prove the case.
You honestly think he played tricks in his own people?
Believe me, Doyle. George Edalji is a thoroughly bad lot.
I've seen no evidence to support that opinion, Captain.
Have you ever seen a pony with its belly ripped open?
The man is a much-respected solicitor. He's a total abstainer and intelligent, and as you yourself admit, from a good family.
Yes, that's what makes the case so damn distressing.
Oh.
At the time of the trial, you understand, I had in my possession enough information, enough statements, to prosecute Edalji 10 times over.
I see.
And no, they were not produced in court, for the simple reason that I wish to save Edalji and his family from further embarrassment.
I would like to see this secret evidence.
It was given to me in confidence.
Captain, I do know the meaning of discretion.
You will need to seek permission from the Home Office. Darling, we are not dealing with a simple detective yarn here. It is a long and complex issue.
I'd like to think I have a lucid mind, Captain. I would like to see the detectives involved in Edalji's case.
That is not possible.
Oh?
There were no detectives on the case.
None at all?
There are no detectives in my constabulary.
What?
It is my opinion that detectives are of little use in the well-run constabulary. Of course, they provide authors who should know better with cheap laughs for their stories. No, Doyle. All my officers and constables are trained in every aspect of police work. Each of my stations works as one efficient unit.
Then would it be possible to talk to
and
the officers?
And each one of them is answerable through a proper chain of command to me.
I do not believe that Edalji mutilated that horse. I do believe that there has been a grave miscarriage of justice.
And having arrived at that conclusion, you are now digging around for evidence to support it. Is that the way Mr. Holmes works? Well, it isn't the way my constabulary works. I do not read your books, but I have heard how they deride the police.
My Holmes stories do not deride the police, Captain. They do sometimes chastise them for their pig-headedness.
I'm sorry I cannot help you further, Doyle. But if you'll excuse me, I'm a busy man.
And so am I, Captain. Very busy indeed.
Sir Conan Doyle. Oh, good afternoon, sir. Constable Rowley.
Yes,
I heard you were visiting the chief this afternoon. I've read them all, you know, sir.
You have?
Yeah, all the adventures and the memoirs. If you go into the station, perhaps I could walk with you, sir. I've just come off duty and I'm going that way myself.
Yes, yes, of course.
My favourite is the Hound of the Baskervilles. The family curses, the chase on the moor.
He's been pretty badly wounded in Afghanistan. Yeah, and another thing puzzles me about him.
Who?
Dr. Watson.
Dr. Watson?
Yes. I mean, in some stories, he says his name's Dr. John Watson. In other stories, he says his name's Dr. James Watson.
Yes, the point has been made to me before.
Yeah, well, the question is he James or is he John?
London train, sir. Next one on this platform.
Are you taking the train to London as well, Constable?
Oh, good heavens, no, sir. I'm giving the local service down to Cannock. I have a girl there.
Cannock? Do you know of an Inspector Campbell?
Oh, yes, sir. I worked with him on the Edalji case.
Did you? So you were at Great Wordley during the summer of 1903, Constable?
Rowley. Well, most of the county was, sir. Why did Edalji write all those perverted letters to himself? That's the puzzle.
What's your theory, Rowley?
Oh, not for me to say, sir, but the evidence was pretty conclusive.
The handwriting, stains in his coat, mud in his boots?
Oh, yes, sir. Constable Cooper was very careful with the boots.
Was he? Did he take a cast of the footprint?
No, but he measured it very careful, like they do in South Africa, he said, with a stick.
With a stick?
Yeah, and a bit of straw. Then he placed Adalji's boot next to the footprint in the mud to make really sure they matched.
Getting mud from the field on the boot in the process?
Yes, that's right. Oh, you don't think...
Oh, my train, I think. Here, take this copy of my latest novel with my compliments. I was going to give it to Captain Anson, but...
Oh, Sir Nigel, is it a Sherlock Holmes adventure?
No, better than any Sherlock Holmes. Sir Nigel, a true English knight who makes a vow that he will claim the hand of his Lady Mary Butterstone only when he has accomplished 3 noble deeds. Don't worry. I'll mention nothing of our chat to your chief.
Oh, he's a fine chief. Fair to all the men.
I'm sure he is.
Sir Conan Doyle! Is it Dr. James Watson?
Watch out, Captain, the Honourable George. I am not far behind. The truth is out as to how horsehairs came to be in the coat. The truth is out as to how mud came to be in the boots. All that is left now is the matter of the handwriting.
It always amazes me how the ducks seem perfectly content in their freezing pond water.
Yes.
I used to spend hours watching them swim about on the little pond on Blackheath when I was small.
So you met with the ma'am when she was down?
Yes.
What did you find to talk about?
Oh, you know, the weather, Christmas preparations, winter fashion. Oh, what do you think, Arthur? You, Tui, us.
I wish you wouldn't.
Why?
Have you been keeping fairly busy?
Oh, yes. And your trip to Darker Staffordshire?
Poor man tried by public gossip, prejudice and malice.
Oh, Mr. Adalji.
You know the case?
Oh, I've heard something of it. He's innocent.
As innocent as you or I.
That's good.
It's Connie. Those nooks. Insinuating that I've been deceitful with Tui.
But Tui knew that there'd been no infidelity, Arthur. We were both quite open with her.
I know that now.
So is my dear knight returned at last?
He's on his way home. But the noble deed is not yet accomplished. Not until I've overcome the final stumbling block.
Oh?
Adalji's handwriting. The graphologist testified that he'd written incriminating letters.
Rather like Adolf Beck. You know, he was pardoned after a graphologist's evidence was found to be false.
Yes. What was his name?
Oh, I don't know. It was some time ago. French, I think. Guérin.
Adalji's man was called Guérin.
One and the same man.
They have to be.
Then your final problem solved.
I'm ready to put pen to paper.
Now we turn to the last tribunal of all. A tribunal which never errs when the facts are fairly laid before them. We ask the public of Great Britain whether this thing is to go on.
Think it'll do?
Oh, it's a stirring piece.
You really think so?
Oh, it'll work.
Then if I hurry, I can get it down to Fleet Street in time to make tomorrow's telegraph.
Sir Arthur! Evening
one
standard!
One at a time, Sir Arthur.
One at a time, gentlemen.
Why did you take up that Adalji case, Arthur?
I saw that he was a man who was telling the truth in a case which needed further investigation.
Have you followed the methods of Sherlock Holmes, Arthur?
I have endeavoured to get at the facts before coming to any conclusion.
So you started without any predisposition in Adalji's favour?
Yes, I kept my mind perfectly open. I have been to Great Worley, as you know. And I've gone carefully over the scene of the outrage.
Yes, thank you, sir. What do you hope will be the official response to your disclosure, sir?
As there is no court of appeal in this country, I am pressing the Home Secretary to appoint immediately a commission, not only to sift thoroughly through all the evidence, but also to hold an inquiry into the wretched police conduct in this case.
So, Sherlock Holmes is having another adventure, and this time in real life. The most unpleasant part of the case, and one which it obviously pains Sir Arthur to have to describe, is that concerned with the strange notions of Captain Anson. That this police officer had harboured a strong prejudice against George Adalji for years, Sir Arthur makes only too clear, and he leaves us in no doubt as to the effect of that dislike on the official conduct of the case.
The Telegraph, Times, Evening News, Daily Chronicle, leaders in all of them.
and heaven knows how many of the provincials, outrage correspondents by the score. The good name of the constabulary dragged through the mud.
The realities of modern popular journalism, I'm afraid.
Chah.
Of course, the irony is that he's said nothing new. It's the way he's said what he has and where he's said it.
Damn it, Chalmers. The morale and integrity of my constabulary is trod over roughshod in the interest of political expediency. And are we to be laughed at by every convict in the county?
The Home Secretary has asked me to give you his categorical assurance that your own personal position as Chief Constable is in no way under threat.
He has? How?
He will personally ensure that appointments to the inquiry committee will be, and I use his words, most carefully chosen.
Explain yourself in clear English.
So kind of you to invite us, Lady Truscott.
Oh, my pleasure, Sir Arthur. You're quite the celebrity of the moment, after all. Just everybody is talking about you and Mr. Adalji.
May I introduce Miss Jean Leckie?
Oh, yes, of course. Delighted to make your acquaintance.
My pleasure entirely, Lady Truscott.
They say you applied the method of Sherlock Holmes.
More simply, it was a matter of applying logic and careful analysis to the evidence. Once I'd done that, the case soon fell away.
Oh, you must be simply frantic waiting for the commission to report.
I have every confidence that justice will finally be seen to be done.
Despite Sir Albert de Rutzen being one of the investigating team.
De Rutzen? He's the chief magistrate.
And George Anson's cousin. I believe they're quite close. You know, I met a Parsee once. He used to be able to put his leg round the back of his head. Or was that the Latvian anarchist? Oh, excuse me. I must just go and welcome Lady Ottilie.
Of course. Anson's cousin, of course. Who else? I was too ingenuous. I've been taken for a fool.
Oh, Arthur.
So that's Miss Leckie, is it?
She is most handsome, but too dark.
I did hear, you know, while his wife was lying ill in bed.
Of course, I'm sure there's no truth in it.
Oh, it's too bad.
Arthur.
It's like being in a long, dark mansion of many rooms. In the first room, they don't wish to know you, what you've come to say. So you go to another room. It's the same here. Blank, contemptuous stares. So you go on to a bigger, larger room. Here they listen reluctantly. Then all of a sudden it becomes clear that the rooms are all connected to each other.
And are you trying to get in or get out of this mansion?
I cannot get out until I've gone in further.
You mean return to Staffordshire?
Yes.
And what do you think you'll find?
I've already proved Adalji innocent. But given that in every room there is a friend or a relation of Anson's, there was only one course open to me. I must find a guilty party. And undoubtedly, the man who wrote these gruesome letters is the man who killed the pony.
Take a seat, Campbell.
I thought I'd better come and see you personally, sir, straight away.
Oh?
One of my constables spotted this in yesterday's Sentinel.
Wanted. Two intelligent, trustworthy young men to assist with detective inquiries of a confidential nature. Usual testimonials. Major Wood, care of the Athenaeum, London West One. Another cuckold wishing to sneak some evidence about his wife's infidelities.
Yes, sir, I'm not sure. There's something about its tone, sir. It's measured, articulate. I made some inquiries, very general, you understand.
Really, Campbell, what is this all about?
Major Wood is Sir Conan Doyle's secretary.
Is he now? I see. I had hoped that his snooping days were over.
Yes, sir. I would have thought that he would have been satisfied, sir.
Something clicks in that muddle-headed brain of his and he starts asking the question, why? Why were the constabularies so keen to convict Adalji on that particular occasion? He might go looking with his magnifying glass in a certain signalman's box. Dereliction of duty, contempt of court. It wouldn't make very pretty reading, would it, Campbell?
One has to start at the beginning, Wood.
Oh, quite.
You see, I've looked at every anonymous letter. They fall into two groups. Some of those written between 1892 and 1895. At the time, the Adalgis were the butt of a number of practical jokes. And all of those written during 1903. The year Adalji was convicted there.
Some others dated between 1892 and 1895 there.
Yes.
Now, you see the difference in the handwriting?
The
one fluid. Look at the ornate twirls and the lowercase g there.
Uh-huh.
And the other group childish, unformed. What do you deduce from that, Wood?
They are the work of two people?
Exactly. One a decently educated man, the other a foul-mouthed semi-illiterate. You're not an alienist, I take it, Wood?
Not that I know.
I thought not. If you had been, you would have immediately noticed the circular dots to the eyes and foul-mouthed letters. A sure symptom of lunacy.
What about the decently educated schoolboy?
No. Undoubtedly, foul-mouthed is our man. But the county of Staffordshire is a large place. How do you even begin a search? Study the evidence.
Ah.
A number of themes punctuate the letters. Look at the very first letter of 1903. He makes three glowing references to the sea. Note, too, where the last hoax to the Adalgis was administered.
Blackpool.
A popular Lancashire seaside town near Liverpool. One of the nation's busiest seaports. Now look again. Throughout the letters are references to Walsall Grammar School. The key to that very school was found on Adalgis' doorstep as part of a hoax. So who are we looking for?
A lunatic.
Who's an ex-pupil of Walsall Grammar School and who's been to sea.
Well, how do you propose to find this man?
That is a job, Wood, for Mr. Frederick Beaumont and Mr. Albert Arrowsmith, the Wolverhampton Road Irregulars.
We wondered if the advertisement had been placed by you, Sir Arthur. It was the tone of the piece. I said to Mr. Beaumont, I said, mark my words, Beaumont, this is out of the regular line of work.
You did indeed, Arrowsmith.
Yes.
What is your regular line of work, Mr. Arrowsmith?
The provision of information appertaining to the state of a relationship between two parties.
Invariably of an extramarital nature.
I see.
We have letters of recommendation from a number of respectable local patrons.
Yes, I think they'll be quite suitable for the task.
Adalgy, is it?
I'd be grateful if you could speak quietly. I don't wish the county constabulary to know that I'm here. You understand they will not emerge from my inquiries in a particularly favourable light.
People round here find they haven't got too much time for the constabulary.
So, it is Adalgia. Awful fuss at the time there was.
Yes.
Now, what do you reckon to that, Sir Arthur? A ball of horsehair from the very horse Adalgia was supposed to have done.
Good Lord.
I obtained it from a client whose brother was one of the jury. They were all offered exhibits as souvenirs. The foreman took the rises.
This case becomes more extraordinary at every turn.
What is the job, Sir Arthur?
To discover the whereabouts of a man who was a pupil at Walsall Grammar School in the 1890s. He's innately vicious and a bad character.
That leaves the field wide open.
Yeah. He will have spent some number of years at sea. Here's a sample of his handwriting. And avoid the police at any cost.
We always do, Sir Arthur.
Yes. Witness, is he?
Gentlemen, the man you seek committed the crimes for which George Adalgy was sentenced to 7 years penal servitude.
He's hired Beaumont and Arrowsmith.
Has he now? Old friends indeed, Campbell. Both have noses larger than their brains. Are they asking awkward questions?
Well, as far as I know. I spend a deal of time in the Horse and Groom, buying rounds of drinks for the local thugs.
And it's as I thought. He's playing at detectives.
Yeah. I'm sure I could find some pretext to pick them up on.
No. Let them be. Just keep them in view. We are both generous men, Campbell. Let us give Sir Arthur Conan Doyle plenty of rope.
So that he can hang himself.
So that he may entwine it round his ankles, trip and fall flat in his face.
Sir Conan Doyle, I know from a detective of Scotland Yard that if you write to Gladstone and say you find Adalgy is guilty after all, he'll make you a lord next year. Is it not better to be a lord than to run the risk of losing kidneys and liver? Think of all the ghoulish murders that are committed. Why then should you escape?
Adalgy, my investigations reveal a sorry tale of incompetence and prejudice in the Staffordshire Constabulary
that starts at the very top with Captain Anson himself.
I regret to say that I am not surprised.
Which is why I suggested meeting here at my club. In a hotel, one never knows quite who may be listening.
Of course.
You have found the man. Does the name Sharp mean anything to you? Royden Sharp?
No. I know of no Sharps in Worley.
He's not a Worley man. He comes from Cannock.
I have rarely been to Cannock.
Well, he is the man. My accomplices in Staffordshire tell me their work is nearing completion. It'll soon be time to strike.
Even though one is convinced of one's own innocence and one has the support of family and friends, when the eyes of the world shout guilty, it is...
A very lonely existence. I know.
Yes.
But the eyes of the world will soon no longer be shouting guilty at you.
Sir Conan Doyle, you cannot imagine how much a pardon would mean to me.
The fact that he has threatened me with injury and death shows just how very strong is the case that I already have against my quarry, dear ma'ams. But I have 5 separate lines of inquiry on foot, by which I hope to make it overwhelming. It'll be a great stroke if I can lay him by the heels, and I think I can. Do not worry. I shall be most careful.
Royden Sharp. Do we know him?
Oh, yes, sir. He's an old friend of ours in Cannock.
Find out what Doyle thinks he's got on him and report back.
Yes, sir. Why should he believe a Cannock man would trek 5 or 6 miles to Worley to maim horses when there are plenty on his own doorstep?
Why should a famous author play silly beggars trying to pretend he's a character out of one of his books?
Sharp was a pupil here at Walsall Grammar, though hardly an exemplary one, as you can see from the reports.
Yes.
I was a senior master at the time, teaching Euclid.
Much as I expected. Midsummer 91, cane for misbehaviour in class, tobacco chewing, prevarication, nicknaming. 18th out of 18.
His elder brother, Wally, was also a pupil at the school. No better.
Have you an example of his handwriting?
No. I very much doubt whether he ever wrote anything he was set to do.
Easter 92, Cane 20 times, mischievous, lying, truancy, cheating. This all fits the picture.
I'm not surprised he's turned out to be a thoroughly bad lot. He was such a rough boy.
That's the house, Sir Arthur.
Yes, wretched sort of place, isn't it?
You see? The curtain's moved.
I think I've detected a curtain moving at every house in the street during the last 10 minutes or so.
Here he comes.
Yeah. Off to the horse and groom, I'll wager.
Yeah. Ugly sort of fella, isn't he? Regular little crook. Been in and out more times than a fiddler's elbow.
He certainly looks the type capable of horse maiming.
Shall we track him?
Of course.
We could pin him down on the flagstones in the alley in no time.
No, I think not. Not at this stage.
Sir Ethel didn't say
look at him, swagger.
The mark of a man who has been to sea.
Spent years in the slaughterhouse, carving up carcasses.
As well as on a cattle boat.
Oh, the neighbours reckon he was wickedly cruel to the animals.
Widder Adams says it were him that dropped her tabby into the horse trough. And then there were the slashing of seats in railway carriages.
Billy Wynn saw him do it.
He's off again. Do we follow?
I've seen enough of him to be convinced.
Oh, you've not seen the clincher. Got the knife, Mr. Arrowsmith.
Yeah.
Beauty, ain't she? It belongs to Sharp. Though don't ask how we come by it.
It must have 3 or 4 blades.
5.
And this is the biggest.
He could easily book them poor horses with that.
Excellent work. Our case, I believe, gentlemen, is now as complete as we can make it. My findings will be with the commission first thing in the morning.
It has been an honour and a pleasure to work for you, sir.
It has indeed.
Dearest ma'ams, letters from you and Jean were waiting for me on my return from Staffordshire, a conjunction which I love. I meet Adalji at Yelverton's office tomorrow to hear the Commission's findings. I am confident that the evidence I produce must surely vindicate Adalji once and for all. Jean and I are to dine together in quiet celebration. Celebration that I have accomplished my deeds. Celebration, too, of our true feelings for each other.
Doyle, Adalji, take
Thank
a
you.
Seat, do.
Thank you, Yildiz.
Now, my clerk rushed me over a copy from the Home Office 30 minutes ago. They accept your innocence, Adalji.
Thank God. Could they have drawn any other conclusion?
However, their resume continues.
Assuming George Adalji to be an innocent man, we find that he has, to some extent, brought his troubles on himself.
Brought his troubles on himself?
The Commission finds no reasons to doubt Captain Anson's belief that Adalji had written the anonymous letters himself. Consequently, it is not possible to grant any sum of money to George Adalji as compensation for the 3 years spent in His Majesty's prisons at Portland and Lewis.
As one door opens on freedom and the truth, so another one ahead closes fast.
Adalji, I'm so sorry.
It is, I suppose, a kind of pardon?
Pardon be damned! It's an unsubstantiated accusation of culpability.
I will be taking steps to ensure that the Law Society readmit you to the role immediately. Does not this sham of a report confirm, if indeed any confirmation were needed, that our system of justice is crying out for a court of criminal appeal?
Adalji, the sad fact is that in taking on the officialdom of England, we're up against an unavowed trade union. Its members are not going to blackleg each other. Oh, no. They'll admit nothing which may inculpate another official. Nothing. Now, we'll take this further.
You will not get an appointment with the Home Secretary for weeks, Doyle.
No, but I do know how to corner his permanent Under Secretary of State.
Oh?
At precisely 9:20 each evening, he's to be found in one of the darker corners of the Athenaeum, quietly sipping a glass of his favourite malt whiskey. I think I shall be dining at my club tonight. It's a wretched decision, Chalmers. It's a compromise. And I can guess why.
Yeah. You're entitled to your conjectures, Doyle.
Did the evidence collected against Sharp count for nothing?
The Commission found your methods inadequate.
Inadequate?
Mm. Anson set down a detailed critique of your accusations.
Anson?
Mm. You said that Sharp was at sea during the period of 8 years or so between the two periods of cattle maiming at Worley. Sharp has been to sea for 10 months only. You said that Sharp ripped up railway carriage seats. But he was accused by Billy Wynne, the lad originally under suspicion. Both boys were 12 at the time. Accusation. Sharp was cruel to animals. Hearsay. There's no concrete evidence submitted. Accusation, Sharp hated the Adalges because of their colour. Hearsay. Accusation, you enclosed some copies of school reports. Absolutely no relevance. Accusation, the knife belonging to Sharp. This knife is a large clasp type. Commonly found among the labouring classes of the town. Shall I go on?
It was only sent as a basis for a proper police investigation.
It has a pardon. That is an achievement. Believe me.
It is not enough. There is no compensation, no apology. No hint of regret at what this poor man and his family have been made to suffer. No criticism whatsoever of the officials involved, still less of the chief constable.
The Home Secretary intends the report to be the final word on the subject.
You don't think he'll be tempted to go to the newspapers again, sir?
Yeah. The newspapers and the public are already growing a little tired of Mr. Adalji.
They are?
Yes. The public will only tolerate the ridiculing of the constabulary for so long. They need us, Campbell. They need to trust us. It was a burst of excitement that can now be laid to rest.
And what'll happen to him, do you think, sir?
Adalji? He won't come back here, that's for sure.
No, sir.
It'll be the best thing for us and for him and for his poor family.
Yes, sir.
Campbell.
Yes, sir?
You're not familiar with any of these Sherlock Holmes stories, are you?
No. Constable Rowley is your man there, sir.
I just thought it might be rather amusing to dip into one of them.
It's outrageous. Anybody'd think we were living in Turkey.
I know the report was written simply to shield Anson. The longer I've been on this case, the surer I've become of Adalji's innocence, of everything. If only I could have got my hands on a copy of Anson's secret evidence. How they love a secret. What power it holds.
If every person in the country were to read the Commission's report and read your articles, which would they believe?
I know I'm right.
So does the world. So do I. I know who's trodden the true and honourable course. I know who to believe.
Do is a finer word than believe.
And what do you intend to do now?
I think you know.
I think I do.
Then, need I ask?
Of course, so that I may answer.
Jean, my dear, would you make me so very happy by consenting to become Lady Conan Doyle?
I have wished for nothing else for the last year.
After all this time.
And since whenever. My own dear knight.
Our wedding will be so fine and gay that even Connie will remark on it. We shall have an orchestra at the reception.
Of course. Provided you make sure to invite one rather special guest.
Oh?
Mr. George Adalji.
I knew it would all work out, my boy.
It's a day I never dared imagine a few years ago.
There's no need to say.
I must go and talk to Adalji. He's been sitting by himself most of the afternoon.
Sir Conan Doyle?
Adalji, my dear chap.
Sir Conan Doyle, I thank you. It is an honor to be counted among your friends.
Nonsense.
I have a small token.
Oh, there was no need.
For you and Lady Doyle.
Jean?
I'm very happy. I'm very lucky.
Jean, this is George Adalji.
I'm so very pleased to meet you, Mr. Adalji.
Lady Doyle?
Adalji brought these. A volume of Shakespeare and another of Tennyson.
They are most exquisitely bound.
I thank you both.
And I, Mr. Adalji, thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Come and meet Jerome Adalji. He's a great supporter of yours.
Well, gee.
I'm afraid I was rather shocked when you told me just before Christmas that you wanted to see us married by the end of the year.
And wasn't I right? In fact, I err on the side of generosity by more than 3 months.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, no. I simply helped nudge what was going to be inevitable. What do you make of the honored guest?
Mr. Adalji? Oh, the poor man looks like a startled rabbit.
Certainly behaves very strangely.
Yes.
He didn't look me in the eye once.
Well, that would be his myopia.
You think so?
Well, yes.
Maybe.
You don't mean that...
Arthur's run his course with this particular cause. And it is best that it is so.
Yes, but if...
All I know is that he has come to terms with one unquestionable truth during the last 9 months. That you are his future, Jean, and always have been since you first met.
But Mr. Adalji, if...
I think it is too easy for the whole truth to remain hidden. When there are so many people who know only small parts of it.
Our guests are demanding action.
Action?
We must leave the floor in the first dance.
Oh, of course.
Conan Doyle and the Adalji Case was written by Roy Apps, with Ian Cuthbertson as Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and Michael N. Harbour as George Adalji. Others in the cast: The Ma'am, Margot Boyd; Anson, Alan Dudley; Mrs. Adalji and Mary, Emily Richard. Major Wood was played by John Church, Jean and Maud by Victoria Carling, and the Reverend Mr. Adalji and Arrowsmith by John Baddeley. Constable Rowley and Beaumont, Michael Tudor Barnes; Inspector Campbell, Anthony Jackson; Robinson and Chalmers, David Goodland; and Yelverton and Mitchell, Stephen Harold. Other parts were played by John Baddeley, Michael Tudor Barnes, David Goodland, Stephen Harold, Anthony Jackson, and Emily Richard. The programme, which came from Bristol, was directed by Brian Miller.